Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There we go. Hello, everyone. Brilliant. Well, great start, Joe. Thank you very much. I'm Steve Hoare. This is the Red Men Originals podcast. I am joined by Chris Pajak and Chloe Boxham, both returning from their vacations away, and me and Dan haven't been anywhere. Dan Club's here as well. Welcome back, Chris. Nice bit of time off for you there.
It's lovely, mate. Yeah, all good.
Yeah, feeling good?
Yeah, very much so. Ready for the season now. I've ignored all the pre-season shite. Thankfully so, because I'd be in a really bad mood if I had to watch us concede loads of goals all the time.
Yeah, speaking of the pre-season show, we're going to be talking about the last game in a minute, so we'll get to that in a sec. Chloe, welcome back. Nice being jetting off to the Caribbean. How are you feeling? You're re-engaged, re-energised for the season ahead?
I was expected to be so, but it turns out no. I just want to be in the sun more than anything, which is a bit sad, because I really like footy, but apparently the sun wins in this case. No, I'm ready for the footy. I'm happy it's back. The Community Shield got me really up for it when Arsenal scored the maddest goal ever. Lovely little deflection that took it to pens. So yeah, I'm ready for football to start back up.
And Dan, hello.
Hello, mate. Okay, yes, long time no see.
It's been a while, hasn't it? All every show the last 2 weeks while these two are off.
Yeah. Literally.
I've got nothing to say to you. I know everything about your life.
My birthday yesterday, if you want to mention that.
Oh, just drop that one in there.
I'm dropping it into all the shows it appears. I'm not telling anybody, like, face to face. I'm just, when I'm on a show, I'm opportune moment.
Happy belated birthday.
I was on holiday and all he kept saying to me was, oh, it's my birthday when
you're
back.
Was it a big birthday?
No, 32. Pretty bog
standard.
You
don't look a day over 31.
Cheers, mate, which is funny because I'm literally
We're going to be speaking about Liverpool's pre-season. Yeah, pre-season's over. We'll have a little chat about the game yesterday against Darmstadt, what we learned from it, any positives, any concerns that we've got going into the season as well. And then later on in part two, we'll do the transfer stuff as well, the latest on Lavia, Andre and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, we'll have a little look ahead to the season. And then after this show, later on Red Men Plus, we've got the Biased Transfer Podcast. We'll have a little wrap up at what's going on around the league in terms of transfers, and also we'll all be making our Premier League predictions, including Paul. He sent his in as well, even though he's not here today. So yeah, check us out for that one. Right then, let's start, Chris. I'll come to you then. You mentioned before about the pre-season shite. It is officially over now. We were speaking off camera before, actually, and you said like it was quite an enjoyable game to watch, that one. Liverpool 3, Darmstadt 1. It was crazy, really, because I thought for 89 minutes 40 seconds Liverpool dominated that game, and it was a mad 20 seconds where they scored, and that really did piss everybody off.
But the mad 20 seconds is just what we had at the start of last season over and over again, isn't it? And that's the thing that I think everyone's getting frustrated by and annoyed by now. I mean, I've lost count of, or I've lost track of exactly when the Fabinho and Henderson news broke, but if I had to guess, it'd be over 3 weeks ago now. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we still are no nearer to getting a defensive midfielder in, and you know, the fact that we've been subjected to Kurt Jones in the six, and then McAllister plays in the six, who I thought did really well, but isn't the type of six that I think Liverpool need at the moment. The experiment with Trent at right back yesterday didn't really work that well for me. I think he was a bit non-committal and going into the middle at times. And from a defensive standpoint, I just think we look really weak at the moment, and that scares me going into the season, to be honest with you. You know, from foot with the ball, you know, with our players, I thought we looked really good. Intricate play through the middle of the park, I thought was excellent. This new iteration of Mo Salah, the creator, is absolutely brilliant to watch. It's like a level of experience and growth that he seems to have had over the summer, and an understanding of where he is and who he is, and a confidence in himself that I think we can see each and every week and stuff. So there are positives there, but the big negatives right now are Liverpool ready for the season? And I think if you answered that honestly, no is probably the answer.
It feels like, Claude, that they're going to... They've got three games in August, effectively three Premier League games before the window closes, and they're just trying to get through them. And then that's what it feels like. And to be fair, one of them's Bournemouth at home, and Liverpool should expect to be Bournemouth, regardless of who they put out. But there are two really tough away games there, and the ease at which teams have scored against Liverpool at times in pre-season, like, I get the number six, and I think this is right, Liverpool need a DM, but that goal yesterday isn't stopped by a DM. That's one kick down the middle of the pitch, where one fella legs it to try and play offside and doesn't tell the other fella. Like, I love Ibu Konate, but I've got no idea. And that's the kind of thing, listen, it's pre-season, and you can iron that out, and hopefully, I actually think he learned, because the next couple of long balls he did, he just headed away. So that kind of is the iron out of it, but Chris is right. It's been far too easy to score goals generally against Liverpool. Pretty much, you know, they hadn't scored a goal all pre-season until yesterday, and it was one long ball down a pitch. That is the one that everyone's like, yeah, that's the major question mark going to Stamford Bridge, and then obviously Newcastle in a couple of weeks as well. Big games.
Yeah, the massive games, and look, if you do defensive errors like that, then they're going to run riot against you. It's a different kind of opposition that you're up against. And it's also frustrating because we are in this type of rebuild that we all know of, and yet we've signed two midfielders and there's clearly spaces there that we need to fill. And it just feels like, you know, we're toying with the idea of it. I mean, how many times have we gone back and forth over Lavia with Southampton? At first, I was like, sure, he's not worth that much. Now I'm like, Jesus Christ, Reds, it's like less than a week till I get until the first game of the season. Just bring me the player. Yeah. Just get it done and dusted now. Because what Liverpool are so good at, and what they have been so good at, is getting deals done within 48 hours. You know, doing it all behind the scenes. Fabinho was the biggest example of that. Lost the Champions League final several hours later. We just practically signed a CDM.
Do you think, though, Chloe, on that, right, it does feel like... Listen, Bayern Munich are going through this with Harry Kane now. It took Arsenal a long time to get Declan Rice. Yeah. These things probably do take a lot of time. It's just that they never get out. And it feels to me, and we'll speak about the Lavia stuff later, and it's why it's annoying everybody, is that we're in an information world now, and every bid and every conversation is leaking out there, and it increases anxiety. Like, Bayern Munich have made like four bids for Harry Kane so far. It took Arsenal like four goes to get Declan Rice. It's just that these conversations, for whatever reason, we're part of a media cycle. Everything is news and everyone's looking for that scoop, and every agent's texting Fabrizio Romano or David Ornstein, or there's a club official trying to put pressure, and it feels like the anxiety builds and builds, and then you see Liverpool's defence getting, well, crap team scoring easy goals against us, and the anxiety, you can kind of sense that a little
Liverpool
bit.
Should have known this, though, with Southampton. Mm. After the Virgil van Dijk stuff, Liverpool should have expected that Southampton were going to be difficult to deal with. Yeah. That's on them.
Yeah, you're right. 100%. Absolutely.
And also, it is a case of, I'm not picking Virgil van Dijk out of the, you know, to single out here, but it's fair to say that he's been off the mark since he got injured, especially, and it was a really bad injury, but he's never quite hit the heights yet. Last season it looked like he was too slow to get out to the ball, he didn't really have a lot of urgency in his body language, and the back four last year alongside the midfield, that did not help them at all. It's the same things that are creeping up. It's the fact that we have done this high line and one of us moves up, but there's no communication to the rest of the team. And also it's the pressure on the ball. If we are going to do this high line, if we are going to step up, the midfielders need to get out and put pressure on. So then the team has to go backwards instead of finding the out ball. It is a rookie error. It's the easiest goal to be scored against. And that is the worry for me. It's the fact that I can still see Liverpool from last season, and Liverpool... any remnants of last season has not a chance against this Manchester City side, who, on top of winning the treble, has now just gone and got the best centre-back available to them. They've got... the bench maybe isn't as good. They've lost a couple of players. I think Gundogan's a massive one. But Liverpool cannot have any schoolboy errors. We saw too many of them last season, and yet they're still there.
That's the thing here, Dan. We'll speak transfers in part two. We want to park that level for now. We'll go deep into it. But you are right. On the Liverpool haven't got as good a squad as Manchester City. I think there's an argument to make Liverpool have got a decent squad, but there are a couple of big gaps in that. We'll speak about in part two. But if that means your margin for error is less, teams can't be given gifted easy goals. It can't be easy to score against. You're playing on the margins a little bit, aren't you? And we're one long ball over the top, where the centre half just runs out for no. I've got no idea what Ibu Konate is doing. He sells Trent completely down the river there. those things have happened a little bit in pre-season. There's been, Jürgen called it, the diagonal defensive or something. He called it wasn't quite right. But I don't know, it felt too easy. And Chloe is right. When you're playing on the margins, you can't afford to make it easy to score against them. And Liverpool are at the minute.
Yeah, 100% we are. And that's the biggest concern, really, heading into the season. It's like the problems we've seen in front of our very eyes last year haven't really been addressed yet. And it might well be a personnel thing that needs to address them. But even sort of systematically, Klopp, after the game last night, referenced the fact we need to work on like a new system before the Chelsea game. And you think, we've got like 5 days. Concern, like, what's that? Like, what? And is that because he hasn't got the players that he'd like to do what he wants to do? And that in itself is a huge issue. Of course it is. And I think Klopp in the same interview as well kind of referenced the fact that this part of pre-season's done now, but he's got to include the next couple of games in pre-season. Like, that's not the case, mate. Like, we are in the business end now. You can't be sort of fiddling around with your formation and your personnel. You should have in mind now what we're going to look like, but because of the transfers not happening, he hasn't got that. But to come back to the point, yeah, we are conceding too many big chances, too many silly goals. I mean, the side that just got promoted back to the Bundesliga carved us open last night to score. That's concerning. Leicester, the only side we didn't concede against, and even they had big chances in the first 20 minutes. Keller had to make a big stop. But Alisson last night denied someone from point-blank range as well. We conceded goals against Guttner Firth the other week, against Karlsruhe, we conceded 3. It's like, these aren't sides we should be giving up opportunities against, let alone goals, and we have been. So there are definitely, definitely concerns heading into the season. I mean, there's loads of positives to take. I kind of summed it up a little bit last night in a match report I did after the game. Loads of positives. Obviously, the front line, Ben Doak is sensational. But defensively, we've got some big, big issues to resolve.
Yeah, definitely. The defensive side, I think we've all agreed there. Liverpool have got work to do, Chris. Did you think any positives from the performance yesterday? Were there anyone who stood out for you in particular?
Yeah, I mean, McAllister was the obvious six. One, I think, in the six. I thought he's, you know, the speed at which he moves the ball around was excellent. You know, bringing players in, turning that ball around the corner and stuff like that. I think you can see that he can play that position, but is he the right player that Liverpool need right now in that position? No, I don't think he is. But, you know, he's going to play. I think he's going to be brilliant wherever he plays, to be honest with you. But, you know, me and Dan were talking about this upstairs, and I was sort of saying, like, listen, you know, I think the general school of thought might be that, you know, McAllister at home against the side, yada, 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 that are lower down the league, anyone can hit the ball long against you. And I know you said before that a DM doesn't help you there. Well, I disagree with that. I think a DM who's thinking about behind them, not in front of them, can help in those situations. But the type of six that McAllister would never be in those situations to help you, because he's obviously thinking about where to go with the ball forwards and what that picture is like in his head and stuff like that. I think, you know, for me, there's a real imbalance with Trent and Robertson at the moment, where they are just leaving Konate and Van Dijk on their own far too often. I thought that would have been ironed out by now, to be honest with you, but it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. It doesn't really look like we're trying to curb Robertson's enthusiasm to go forwards at any point. But you did ask me about positives, so I think the forward players are clear positives. I think the intricate build-up through the centre of the pitch is brilliant at the moment and something that I've not really seen for a while. I love the fact that we've got two attacking midfielders now in through the door and our strikers are just scoring more goals. I think that's really funny because we've wanted goal-scoring midfielders for ages, and what they've done is just make the strikers score more goals. But look, there are positives, but the negatives outweigh them for me right now. I think most teams go into the season undercooked nowadays because the season's so long and you don't want to fall off at the back end of the season when it becomes the business end. So I understand going in with, you know, maybe treating a little bit of August as your pre-season. What I don't understand going into the season with is without a squad. And I don't think Liverpool have got a squad. Today, we have not got a squad good enough to challenge for the Premier League title. And that, I think, is a major concern.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. You're right.
Because we should be going in every season with a squad that's capable of challenging. And right now, without the midfielders that we need, we're not capable of challenging. And that is a huge issue for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll have a little chat about who, like, again, the Lavia stuff and maybe Andre and stuff in part two. On the McAllister as a six thing, Klaus, if we want, obviously, the manager reveals Kurtz has a slight issue, and that's why he didn't play. He obviously comes on for 15 minutes or so at the end, but ironically plays as an 8.
Wing, was it?
Plays as number 8. McConnell played as the 6. Liverpool, Chris is right, Liverpool are going into Chelsea without a recognised defensive midfielder fit and available. The only one that's in the squad at the moment is young Stefan Bicetic, and he's still not fully fit. Liverpool have to go to Stamford Bridge and play somebody in that role. Did McAllister do enough to suggest it might be him? Or do you still think Curtis is the man that they're going to use there? Again, both have positives, both have major red flags, neither are ideal. It's not the situation Liverpool wanted to get themselves in, like this, where we are. What we saw from McAllister, do you think it could be now? Because I agree, I actually thought he had a pretty good game overall.
Yeah, I thought he had a better game than Curtis Jones had in the six, but once again, both of them, that's not their normal position. I think McAllister's going to be in the six role. The way he controls the game, that is really important for me. I think Curtis Jones, really good player, and he has the opportunity to now play on that eight kind of role. But once again, he started out as a left winger. You then bring him back to centre mid, to then bring him back to CDM. McAllister's had more experience there. He's done it in the Premier League. He's done it for an unbelievable Brighton side. So I trust him more at this moment in time. But once again, it's not a choice I want to really be picking. I don't want McAllister there. He's not. We didn't buy him to put him there, so we shouldn't have to deal with the makeshift of doing that. You're also losing his assets as a number eight and a double pivot. But yeah, it's one of them where if I'm choosing less of the two evils, I'm picking him as me number six, because he just, from that game, and this is not on Curtis Jones, but I think about McAllister straight after that game. When you speak about Darmstadt, it's McAllister. It's him running the show. It's him controlling. It's him also finding himself in areas which I probably don't want him to find him as a DM. He was on the edge of the box taking shots and stuff. And I was like, wait, you're our DM, lad. What are you doing? But for me, he's a much better fit right now than Curtis Jones. And that just means that Curtis Jones now gets an option to play in the double pivot further up the pitch.
Dan, I'll come to you. Chloe's right. McAllister did do well as a six, mm-hmm. but he is an unnatural six. The flip side is, he is a player who has played number six / deeper midfield in the Premier League for quite a little bit, actually, for Brighton. He did it fairly often.
Yeah.
Curtis Jones was kind of shoehorned into this by Liverpool a few weeks ago. It looked like he was being groomed to be the man who was in place for Chelsea, and then obviously picked up a little injury or what have you. The manager has got a decision to make. I think you could... You know who's going to be in goal for Liverpool. You know who the back four is going to be. You know Mo Salah's going to play. McAllister's going to be on the pitch. Szoboszlai's probably going to be on the pitch. It's just a couple of issues going forward to that game, and one of them is, who is the number six? What are your thoughts going into that Chelsea game?
Well, my thoughts prior to last night were that it would be Curtis Jones, to be honest with you, just because he played the one before, obviously, the Bayern game. And I did wonder, personally, I actually prefer the McAllister choice in there, because as you referenced there, he did it for pretty much the first half of last season in the Premier League under Graham Potter before he moved on, and the Zerbi used him in a more advanced role, which I actually think suits his skill set better, and that's why we've signed him. So the reason I was sort of in the Jones camp was because you can shoehorn him into different roles. We've already converted him from a winger into an eight, which I suppose goes against the fact that you now want him to be a six, because all his natural instincts are to be attacking and to make things happen in front of him, and you're getting that with both of them. But I do think now, having seen McAllister do it last night, obviously in the flesh as well, I think although he does want to be in the final third, sort of influencing the game down there, I do think he has got the sort of tactical discipline to be more disciplined than the Curtis Jones, and there's not a lot in that, and neither of them want to be doing it. I think it's an unnatural role for both of them, but for sort of hopefully one game, maybe two, I think we do go with McAllister, because he has done it an amount of times in the Premier League. He's done it in a very good side. It's far, far from ideal, and that's kind of the bottom line amongst all of this, and that's what we need to sort of remember. We shouldn't really be having this conversation, is the point. Like, we shouldn't be sitting here going, who can play the six, unless we had signed Ron and they'd unfortunately got injured or whatever. This isn't the conversation. It's not the place we wanted to be. I'm sure it's not a place Jurgen Klopp wanted to be either, but out of the available options, I would be in camp Alexis McAllister for Sunday, because I think he has got that tactical discipline, that tactical nous to perform the role in a better way than Curtis Jones has right now.
No, I tend to agree. And Chris, this might sound really, really basic, and I apologise if it does, because I know you're a fellow who likes a tactic, and for this might be a bit basic, but like, I think he's a better tackler.
I
noticed that yesterday. That
he won the ball back.
Yeah, look, and where Curtis Jones in the previous friendly, there was a goal where the lad just, against Bayern, where the lad just ran by him and he just didn't really do anything. McAllister, a couple of times, he's really strong in the tackle, and maybe, again, against the Chelsea side, who we don't know who's going to be in their midfield and who's going to be up front there. Their new striker's just done his knee. But you had to guess at some point there's going to be someone running at Alexis McAllister. You're DM one-on-one, and McAllister just looks a bit physical. I know he's much, much shorter than Curtis, but he does look a bit more physically robust.
Yeah, he is, and he's a great player. I think the difference between what he did for Brighton last season and this is this isn't really playing in a double pivot in the same way, is it? You know, you got Trent there for a bit, and yeah, then you're on your own. And he didn't play on his own in the six last season. He played alongside Moises Caicedo. And when you look at the stats from last season, he was second behind Declan Rice in the league at the point when they changed the formation. They went to the World Cup in winning the ball back. Yeah. You know, he had more than Moises Caicedo. And by the end of the season, Caicedo's overtaken him because he moves forward and stuff. So it's certainly something that he's able to do. My big concern with him being in the six and with Kurt Jones being in the six and anyone who's going to play that six is, how do you do it when you've got a lad with you for some bits of the game and then without you for others? The only guys who can do that are guys, I think, who've played the six on their own. Mm. So they're used to being on their own, and when they've got someone, it's a bit of a bonus. Not yeah, the other way around, when they're used to being with someone and then when they're on their own, they're like, yeah, what am I supposed to do here? Yeah. And that's a schematic problem that Liverpool have at the moment. Whoever's going to be signed, the likelihood is they've got to have played the six on their own to be able to play alongside Trent moving in, or they're going to take time to adjust to that. You know, McAllister at times, I think, was given free rein by Trent during the game. It's almost like, well, he's pulling the strings so well, I kind of don't need to be there. Mm. And I think there was a little nod to how good he is on the ball that Trent didn't. Whereas when he played with Fabinho towards the back end of the season, Fabinho sort of stood to the side and went, yeah, Trent, you just move the ball around and all that type of stuff. But schematically right now, Liverpool are not right. And that's because of the players that we haven't got in the squad. And I think that is what Jürgen was referencing in his post-match interview that you mentioned before about having to find a formation that suits the players. It's all well and good wanting to play a formation where Trent moves from right back to centre mid, but if you don't have the players to play that formation, it's stupid, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Or you're going to be so far behind by the time everyone gets used to it that you're out of the title race already. So I think that's what Jürgen's leaning into. It's like, look, I know what I want to achieve this season, but right now I can't do that. So I'm going to have to find a way where Liverpool can win games in the first 2, 3, 4 weeks until we get reinforcements in. If we get reinforcements in, by the way, I'm sure we will. Like, but maybe they won't be at the level that we might need to challenge for the title. So I think that's the big problem that Liverpool have right now.
On the negatives, Daniel, Chris is right. Like, Liverpool are going to have to get through these at least one game. Maybe 2 games, yeah, potentially 3 games. The window shuts, obviously, in September. Who knows how much business they are or aren't going to do. You know, the Lavia stuff rumbles on at time recording. What they're going to have to do, they might have to outgun teams. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the attackers in a moment because I think they all look pretty sharp. What I would say is that one of the most impressive things I've seen from pre-season is the set-piece threat is definitely there. Mm-hmm. There's another 2 goals. Obviously, the first goal and the last goal last night come from Szoboszlai corners. Obviously, really, both near post, well worked set pieces. One Diaz flicks on it. I think Van Dijk's meant to score that.
Yeah.
And it's just obviously if the way it works out. If obviously Mo Salah's just absolute predatory in the box and snips it up. The second goal's a very well worked one with Diaz's back heel. We obviously scored from the corner against Bayern Munich. We are looking like more of a set piece threat again. We've got Szoboszlai's corner taking looks brilliant. Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing that I've been really impressed with by him. Obviously, we've always said probably Kostas is probably the best corner taker in the team, him and Trent Alexander-Arnold. Well, Szoboszlai might take that one. Now, that's another way where Liverpool, when we were at our best, we were the best set-piece team. Even last year, I think we scored a lot of set-piece goals. We always do. But it looks like we could go another level on that, which again, if you are going to need to win games 2-1 and 3-2, a couple of bonus goals from corner kicks is certainly one way you can do that.
Yeah, definitely that. Yeah, if you're going to be conceding goals or at least chances, you're going to need different strings to your bow, aren't you, to sort of beat teams and to break teams down. And we have struggled in the past. We're hoping with the sort of the inclusion of these attacking midfielders, Szoboszlai includes, and McAllister, of course, when he plays in his role that we've signed him for, not the six, like I think we're going to see for a couple of weeks now. We have got different ways of breaking teams down now, but you're right in terms of corner taking and set pieces. That's always going to be pivotal to us. When you've got someone of the presence and the height of Virgil van Dijk, I'd add Cody Gakpo to that list as well now in terms of his height and what he offers in the box. And obviously Diogo Jota, even though he's quite sort of diminutive in his stature, he does get up well and he's brilliant in the air. Like, so it's really important that we have that quality from set pieces, and it's where Andy Robertson's lacked, actually, if anything, isn't it, during his Liverpool career. Set pieces that he's never quite been of the level, which is why we sort of hailed Tsimikas for his. But Szoboszlai is outstanding. I actually don't think he had the greatest game last night, Szoboszlai, to be honest. I think he was tactically a little bit all over the place and his touch was off as well at times. But in terms of set piece delivery, absolutely outstanding. And him and Trent, And they're quite different in the way they deliver a ball as well. So they're going to be two very different weapons for us. And ones we're going to have to use, because I don't think there's any two ways about it. For the next few weeks, you know, we're going to be flying by the seat of our pants a little bit because we haven't fixed the holes defensively. Chris mentioned it a moment ago in terms of we haven't got the personnel to play the system. I think that stretches beyond the six, actually. I think it stretches towards Andy Robertson's side as well defensively. I don't think he's in tune with his system whatsoever yet. And you'd like to, I think, we'd address that too, but that hasn't been ironed out. So I think we are going to have to try and beat teams by scoring more goals than it sounds Michael Owen-esque in his punditry, but we are literally going to have to just go gung-ho, and we have got the firepower to do it, and as you mentioned, we've got different ways of doing it now, which could be crucial.
Absolutely, Chloe. Well, I noticed at one point, I was obviously on the watch-along for the game, and Darmstadt got a free kick on just on the edge of the box, and then I looked at the Liverpool wall, and we were fucking massive. It had Konate, Van Dijk, Gakpo, Szoboszlai, all big six-foot lads, and I was thinking, Liverpool are getting back to being like what I think Jürgen wants. He wants a big physical team. Obviously, there's always going to be a couple of little lads in there as well. McAllister's always going to be there a bit about. Jota's not exactly a giant himself. But what Liverpool, I've always thought, Klopp wanted a big, strong, powerful team. And he's not that far away from that. Again, whether it's Lavia who plays as a six if they get him in, or whoever they get in, I'm guessing that's another type of profile of player. They want another 6 foot or near 6 foot lad. But that is another, like Dan's right, if you're going to be dangerous off corners, that's another, definitely something that I was looking at thinking, because last year I was thinking at times we look small. I remember playing against Brentford away thinking, oh my God,
where these are getting bullied
a little bit. Liverpool do look like they've got a bit more physique to them, which again, if you're going to be a little bit, like Dan said, seat of your pants a little bit, then that's another thing that I think Jürgen's identified a couple there who, you know, Liverpool are starting to get a big, strong physical outfit again.
Yeah, you could tell that with the players that he wanted, the number eight, the players who we've been linked with, you know, players.
Szoboszlai's massive, by the way. Yeah. Oh, big Z. I didn't realise he's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, even the likes of Taram, Ryan, Gravenberch, the 6 foot yep. plus lads who absolutely dominate. And even the likes of you, McAllisters, and, you know, those type of players who are a little bit shorter, they've got the Genie Wijnaldum in them where they can shrug people off a ball, they can use the body really well. Diogo Jota is really small, but my God, he puts himself about, he doesn't get bullied off a ball often, he's really good at headering in and around the area. So it does look like we've gone with a more physical team, and rightfully so, because we got bullied last year from corners. You mentioned that Brentford game, I'm pretty sure we conceded about 3 offside goals. All of them which could have been given, but we've got a little bit lucky there on top of like the 3 that we actually did concede. Last season there was just far too many players who was getting bullied, who wasn't up to standard. And I think the new lads coming in, not just are the of the physique and the stature to bully players and dominate the midfield, they're also going to kick everyone else up the arse, because you've got to now reach my level. The fact that I'm coming into Liverpool and I'm setting the standard shouldn't be a thing. You should be setting the standard and you should be keeping me out the team. So hopefully it makes more people motivated. It maybe didn't with our captain, who decided to get off, and right now we need 2 midfielders. But the rest of them, hopefully we can gel well. But once again, that the problem I've got is the formation of it. I don't think anyone really tactically knows where they need to be and is disciplined enough right now.
You'd like to hope that they would at some point, by the way, because what we've been doing all pre-season, I suppose you would ask, Chris. What I would say on the, again,
playing with Fabinho.
Pretend that helps. Skewing positively again a little bit here. I'm aware, like, not everyone's feeling that way, but I think there's been a couple of things in pre-season that have been positives. We'll speak about the goal scored in a minute, because the strikers have all been on fire. I've been really impressed by the press. Liverpool get a couple of goals, they'll get certainly the second goal, they have a few more chances. What this new system does allow you, you've got 3 lads right up front and there's 2 just behind them. And the Liverpool, Salah in particular, looks brilliant at it. Jota was everywhere. Diaz looked much better at it. They were backed up very, very well by Gakpo, again, brilliant at it in that 8 role. And Szoboszlai, again, that, and Jürgen's always said this, you know, our number 6, we've asked our number 6 last season to do too much work because we're too easy to play against. It feels to me like one of the things that they've definitely worked on in pre-season, like almost like priority one, is can we get that press from the front back? Because it does look a little, it looks more in sync. Again, there was a lot of injuries last year and there was a lot of swapping and changing and things like that. But everyone who's played, I think, in that front 5 so far, it all pre-season, looks like they've known exactly what their job is on that, in that regard.
Yeah, I think they want to get back to their identity, don't they? I think that's what Liverpool are looking at the moment. And, you know, you can see that, I think. you know, with the greatest of respect to them, last night they didn't have a fucking Scooby-Doo what was going on in the first 10 minutes of the game. You know, Mo Salah nicks that ball off the defender, doesn't he? And we score so early on. And it just seemed like that all the time. I was quite impressed with Szoboszlai's willingness to press, if not necessarily his understanding of where exactly he should be in the press. Because he goes a lot. We don't quite get there all the time. That will come. That will come.
I like, you know, I saw that as well. So I used to cut you across. He knows when to foul though as well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
when he's beaten, beaten, he's quite happy. I mean, he got booked just for a shocker. Yeah. But like, he's quite happy to just throw someone on the floor if he beats the press, which again, brilliant. That's what you absolutely need to do. If the press isn't going to work on you, throw the lad on the floor. And I think Liverpool have done that quite a lot this season.
We lacked we lacked that a lot last season, didn't we? As well,
yeah, we did. And I think Jota leads the press really well. And I think it's always been an underrated aspect of his game. I think because Firmino was so heralded in how he led the press and how he linked football for us, I just think everyone was always under the radar on just how much Jota put into it. And I think he's brilliant. How Diaz, it's just natural to him. Yep. Jota, yeah, Salah understands it. The two lads behind, Gakpo, understands it from the front and from midfield. And I think that helps him from the midfielder point of view, knowing what the striker's going to do. So if that striker does that, this is what I've got to do. So there's a natural understanding because he's played both positions. So yeah, definitely has been nice to watch. And you know, I've not watched all the pre-season games because, quite frankly, I'm a really competitive person and I really hate uncompetitive stuff. But last night it was more about, you know, getting that feel for the season and stuff. And certainly from the pressing standpoint, I think we're there. It's just the second phase is what happens after the press doesn't work, and that's the thing that I keep coming back to that I'm really concerned about.
Absolutely. On the forwards though, Chloe, like Darwin Nunes, I think I've been saying for a while now, is Liverpool's probably fifth option at the moment. Ben Doak's the sixth, and he looks electric, by the way. There's sort of about that kid that just gets bums off seats. Liverpool are going into this season, I think, with six lads, and they're all looking good, Nick. They all look fit, they've all had a good rest, they've all scored goals in pre-season, all five of them have looked sharp, and then the sixth young lad has lit games up for the last 15-20 minutes, and he certainly, you know, he got off the bench first, just he's definitely an option now. You know what I mean? He got on ahead of a few others. He wasn't like he got brought on with 10 to go with the other young lads. So that we now know that's Liverpool's six attacking options. That's mightily impressive, and that for me is like the one thing I'm hanging my hat on rather for a couple of weeks. I will trust Jürgen to get it right. I might get burned saying this. I think they'll do the transfers they need to do. Probably at least two. They probably need to do three, but I think they'll at least do two. That'll get some way to fixing that potential. But I do believe that we can hang our hat on all six of these lads being in form, and we're not. It isn't just the Mo Salah show again. Because it can't just be the Mo Salah show again. He'll score his goals. He's fucking brilliant. He's Mo Salah. He's been excellent all pre-season. But Liverpool have got a real strong five backed up with a very exciting young player there that we can hopefully go and get goals against some of these teams, which we're definitely going to need.
Yeah, we've looked brilliant. I've loved the intricate play from all five of them, to be honest. The link up there. And sometimes I'm like, just shoot. And it's like they do one extra pass. But I'm sat there and I'm like, actually, I'm really enjoying it. The, you know, in and around the box, the link up play. I thought Luis Diaz, we've talked a lot about the fact that he needs to get more goals. It's just, sadly, if you lose a Sadio Mane, and Luis Diaz is absolutely incredible as a footballer, you need to have the same output or close to the output that Sadio Mane had. And he's getting there slowly but surely. He's had a much better pre-season. He's got the goals. He's looked really happy to get these goals, by the way. If you just want to see how much motivation and how much desire that lad has, look at the way he celebrates scoring a goal against someone in a pre-season friendly. I think Gakpo has been really good, really impressed with him. Impressed with him as the eight as well. Jota, him and Salah's link-up play has been brilliant. The fact that he can do it both feet, he's got the, you know, the spring in his step to win at Edda. He's been all over the park. You've mentioned the press and those three electric. And also, when you include the passing of Trent, and which when we finally understand that midfield, the passing range of Trent, who I didn't really think was in the game yesterday, imagine him doing diagonal balls to get Luis Diaz in. It's going to be incredible. Salah is just Salah. He's just unbelievable. Darwin Nunes, I've been much impressed with him. I think his composure's been there more. He's still missed a couple of sitters, I will not lie, but he looks sharper. He looks he's getting in the right areas and he's finishing more off than he did last season. That's what I will say. It is just pre-season, but he's also got in places where, I mean, I think it's his first goal that he scores, the one where he tries to pass to Salah. This is weeks ago, by the way. I was on holiday. Don't know who it was against.
Carlsruhe, that was.
Thank you. I even liked that. I'd want my striker to be selfish, but I saw the idea and luckily the ball came back to him and he finished off the second time.
Finish it, lad.
I did like it, though.
Can I be honest, Claude?
That's an act of no confidence to me.
I liked it. I was laughing me out of fist. He had his head there. I thought it was so funny.
Oh, how much he missed.
Well,
yeah.
I just think it was like a defensive header. I think sometimes he just like, I don't know, he has like a little brain fire.
I'm shocked he used the word composure when talking about him, to be honest. Because
it's. I think he's actually
gotten better, though.
He has a bit.
Look at the season. He's gotten better. I think he's got like 4 goals.
He should have had 12, don't
you? No, he should have had less. Look, I'm trying to, you know, give him some positivity so that he does well. But I'm going to be honest, Ben Doak has been the thing that I have been most impressed with so far this pre-season. What a lad he is. Yesterday sat in my house watching a pre-season friendly and I very nearly screamed at his run, which he nearly finished off as a goal. I'd have been up running around my house if that would have went in. And
He makes beaten players, Chloe.
Simple.
So easy. He's
everyone.
Simple.
Everyone. And he's done it. He has done it. We'll find out, can he do it against the best left back or best right back.
Did it against Digne, didn't he?
He's fucking shite. Don't worry about him. But yeah, he does. He was mad. They don't even kick him. There's something about him that is just so fun to watch. And like I say, he looks like he's an option now, Chloe, because he was on with, you know, all through pre-season, they've done the drips and the drabs with the subs, and with all due respect to
McConnell
and Scanlon, they're not going to be in the team, they're not going to be there. They were Freundorf, for example. Ben Doak came on with the big guns, you know what I mean, with Elliot and with your Simicas. These are first-team squad players, and Ben Doak was in the first-team squad. It looks like he is the backup right winger at the moment.
Yeah, he's got to be. And, you know, there's some people saying don't send him out on loan. I don't think that's even an option. It can't be an option. He is incredible. And if you give him the last 15 minutes after you've tired the team out and just let him go and run a defender into the ground, he'll get the end product. There was a time where I think he tried to pass it into the middle to Luis Diaz. He had a little bit too much on the pass, but that'll come and he'll become such a weapon when we break teams down and then we just lob Ben Doak on for 15. He's got something to say. And also, Salah will be missing for the AFCON for a little bit. I'm okay to see Ben Doak there.
I also think as well, like, he could tear the Europa League into bits.
We'll
start rounding up on the forward options here, Dan, but like, it does feel like this is... It's almost headaches for Jürgen Klopp and he's got decisions to make negatively, really. He's almost like fitting, I don't know, I've got to find a number six from somewhere. I've got to find my left back. Is he a left back? Is he a centre back? I don't know what he is. Up front, he's got everything. He's got every type of player you can want. And going into Sunday's game, it's like being at a buffet where it's like, choose what you want. You can have it all, and it's all good. We know Salah's in, but then if he wants Gakpo in the nine, he can use him there. He can use Jota up front, he can use Jota on the left. He's got Diaz, he's got Darwin. Like, the option, he can put Gakpo as an eight if he really wants them all on the pitch. That's a nice decision that the manager's got to make. And to be honest, as long as it's Salah plus two others, there aren't many bad ways you can go about this, really.
No, there aren't. I agree with that. I think for me, you could probably split them in two halves, to be honest with you, our six attacking options. I think you've got your three sort of intelligent, your bankers, you know what you're going to get from them week in, week out, and that's Jota. Diogo Jota's clinical, we know what he's all about. He'll score your goals. Cody Gakpo, incredibly intelligent footballer. I don't need to sit here and wax lyrical about him. I do that enough. I absolutely adore him. I think he's a brilliant player. Mohamed Salah does Mohamed Salah things. He's always going to. I think they're your three bankers for me personally. They're the three. You know what you're going to get from them week in, week out. They're not really going to underperform. They're going to deliver time and time again. I think he's actually got three X-factor stroke wild cards with Darwin Nunez, Ben Doak and Luis Diaz. Diaz is probably on the brink of those two. I think he's more consistent than the others, but with Nunez, even last night when Nunez comes on, and you spoke about the press earlier, and it's sort of in sync, and everyone knows when to go at the right time, and it's sort of a trigger point and all that. Nunez is still a little bit headless chicken for me in that, and there's times last night when he's sort of ploughing a lonely furrow and just chasing lads, which is great because you like to see that enthusiasm. We all adored Andy Robertson when he did it against Manchester City, for example, but he doesn't seem to fully get it still, to me, Darwin Nunez. So I think he does remain sort of the wild card, the X factor, whenever you do play him. But, I mean, Ben Doak, I was in the press box last night, and there's this sort of journeyman journalists around me and they're getting up off the seat. And I said to you this morning, Chris, every time the ball got to Doak, you just hear this gasp, this intake of breath, as if what are you going to do next? And I was umming and ahhing for weeks about Ben Doak and just send him out on loan because he just needs to play footy. But he needs to play footy for Liverpool. That's what he needs to do because he's that good. He's that special. Chloe sort of alluded to it there. Whenever Mohamed Salah's ran a left-back ragged for 70 minutes, you throw Ben Doak on that left-back and be thinking, oh no, I do not need this in my life right now. This kid, who does not care one iota what I've done in my life, is going to run at me time and time again. He's short, but he's strong, so he'll stand up for himself and brush past people. I think he's going to be incredible. His end product, people keep sort of talking about that, and it has been lacking in inverted commas so far, but some of his deliveries have actually been okay. Like the one bad one was the Bayern Munich cross, which he delivered to Nunes. That was disappointing.
The throw tie.
But he knew straight away he got it wrong, didn't he? But some of his pullbacks and stuff like that have been okay. It's just been nobody's been arriving at the time, you know what I mean? But I think we've got something very, very special with Ben Doak. But yeah, in terms of the attacking options, to sort of round off the point, Boss, all in form, all look great in their own way. I do still think there's question marks over Nunes, personally, and I'd like to think they'd have been addressed by now, but they haven't been clearly. His composure, he's an enigma to me, Darwin Nunes. Earlier on, in the first couple of games, you think, okay, he looks more settled now, this looks great. And then two games later,
that
like, actually...
the ones I was watching.
Yeah, exactly. All of a sudden, last night, I'm thinking, oh, I don't know again.
And it's easy to be chilled out, Chloe, when you sat on a sunbed with a pina colada.
It was like 5 a.m. in the morning, one of them, and I fell asleep halfway through it again.
He has his boss, by the way, and Jota's boss. Jota's Jota. He always is. He's going to do what he's going to do. And I think it's great headache to have. Who knows what he's going to do? But like I say... I think we always say, don't we, Champions League final 11. I think his front three for Champions League final will probably be Jota, Gakpo, Salah, personally. Because you can just trust them. You know what you're going to get. The other three, just a bit mad, some of them, aren't they? Nunes especially.
It is. It's fun. And it's exciting.
It is fun,
I'm harking back to Liverpool 4, Arsenal 3, that opening day of the season. We might need a little bit of that until we can get things sorted. Got quite a few super chats to get through before we get to the break. And then, obviously, part two, we'll be doing the transfer stuff. The first two, got two super chats from Khalil. The first one was, I actually think McAllister was good at the number 6, but we still need him as an 8 or a 10.
Yeah.
And then he followed that up by, are we going to sign anyone? I hope so. I think we'd all agree we hope so. Khalid says...
More than one.
Hopefully, fingers crossed. Khalid says, we should move on to Amadou Haidara of Leipzig. I've never seen this player.
I'm on to him.
I don't know who that is. Sorry, I apologise.
I can't tell you if he's brilliant,
I don't know who that is, so I can only apologise, but I trust your judgment, Khalid. I'll have a word with Jörg and Jörg.
Seen him last night.
I only know one Amadou, and that's Amadou and Miriam. It's a thing, a group.
Okay.
I think it's Nigerian music. I remember seeing them at Glastonbury.
Good.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. There's this week's music tip from Chris. Craig with the 499 Super Chat. Thanks very much. Craig Teb says, I was really impressed with Dom last night. McAllister was great in the 6 when we're in possession, but we need an enforcer for when we're not. Diaz was class. We do need a number 6. Again, we're going to speak about you. And I agree, Diaz looks sharp. I think I've been the biggest Luis Diaz, not doubter, but I think I've been the one who's been least on the Diaz train a little bit. I think, and I'm on it. Like I am. I'm still team Jota, but like Diaz has been brilliant. I know still people laugh at me about him when I say I'd still go Jota on the left, but Diaz has been fantastic so far, and you can't go wrong with him. Luke Burns, thank you very much, Luke. I 100% agree with Steve. Thank you. I'm just going to end talking there. I'm going to read the rest of it out. I 100% agree with Steve. He is so handsome. Have you lost weight? Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
I 100% agree with Steve. The attack is looking good and will bail us out till the signings come in. But I definitely agree we need two to be brought in. I think we'd all agree with that one.
Yeah.
Especially with me looking fantastic.
Yeah, that was the best bit.
He did well written, Steve.
He didn't say that, but I just ad-libbed.
I think it's fair.
Yeah, honestly, I think I'm looking swell. Really? Or swollen.
Swell. Yeah,
as opposed to swollen. ID Silver, $10. Thanks very much. My mate says, I've never been a fan of this new formation. It can be exciting to have Trent float in and out, but I hate the instability and conceding all the time. I miss our old system.
I think we were
getting the numbers wrong last night. I think, you know, the idea is probably 5-5 and we were 6-4. For a lot of that match. And I just don't think we're playing it right at the moment. And again, you know, that's an issue.
I think I'm all right. I like the new system. Every system's got positives and negatives. Every single system in the world. I like getting Trent on the ball more. it just means, oh my God, you've got to press the fucking living hell out the ball. Because if you can get beat by one long ball over the top into an area where Ebu's in trouble, your lads have got to run and run. And someone's got to be able to get back. And you are right. I liked McAllister, going back to the earlier comments. I think it was from Craig. McAllister was all right as a six, but there were times where he just drifted. Almost like, what's the word, subconsciously just out of the way a little bit, you're right, and then it ends up being 7-4. Trent almost was playing right back again. Does that make sense? He was often as a right back. It did, you're right, the balance felt off. Connor asks, with a $14, I think that's super chat, thanks very much, Connor. I'm not making any excuses, but are we hamstrung financially because we're upgrading the stadium like Arsenal were?
I don't think so. I don't think it should make any odds, should it? It was a loan, wasn't it, from FSG that we've got to repay and stuff. So yeah. I don't think that makes any difference to us.
No, my thinking, again, and we'll do the transfers very quickly. So, but my thinking on the transfers was there was a budget of like 40 million quid for the midfielder. I think that's what was left. And that's why they were trying to get Lavia for cheap. Then they sold two lads. So that budget's probably still there. But I think the reason everyone could just pay the money, you just use the Fabinho money, I think it's because they want two. And I don't think, the more they spend on this lad, the less they've got for the next lad. It's kind of, that's how I've read it a little bit. So I don't think it's to do with the stadium. I think the money is there for someone. They're having to buy replacements, lads, who they didn't want to lose.
We wanted Lavia for weeks. We wanted Lavia for before Fabinho.
I know for an absolute fact, Liverpool's briefing was, they like Lavia, but at like 30 to 35.
Yeah, well,
and then they sold two lads, and now all of a sudden they're paying 50% more already than they wanted to pay, and that still hasn't been enough.
What was the latest bid? 45 plus add-ons?
Reported to be, no, it's a total of around 45 to 46, including the add-ons. Southampton 150. So I think they're getting close. We've got a couple of updates on Lavia coming after the break, but I honestly,
I think this is like Liverpool's fault here. They've said all summer long they want 50.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's like going into a shop and asking for a Lucozade and you go £1.20, you go £90.
Like that fella on the meme. To be fair, he walked out with it.
Yeah. So he just walked out with it. You can't do that with Lavia. You can't just go
to St Mary's and just tie him. I think we thought
Southampton would bow to us, didn't
Which
they?
Which is
and
fine,
they done.
But like, and you've got to be frugal.
Of course, yeah.
You've got to try and get them for as cheap as you possibly can. But there is a tipping point before the season starts where you've got no fucking six, right? And the season starts in 6 days.
Yeah.
And that's the tipping point where it's like, actually, it's better for us to pay over the odds a little bit here and get him through the door for a week or 2 weeks, because we could have had him for 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah. We could have had him for 6 weeks
100%.
At this point, and we're probably going to end up spending what they wanted anyway, but having him for 6 weeks less.
It's daft. All we didn't want to do, we don't want to become Chelsea or Man United into negotiations when you walk into the room and they look at each other and go, tell you what, we can have these for an absolute fortune. You never want to be that. But you're right, at some point, when Southampton are standing firm on their valuation, you do need to look at yourselves and go, all right, let's just do it then. You know what I mean? And we've long gone that situation now. We're so far down the line. We look stupid if we walk away, and we already look stupid for not paying it weeks ago. We got ourselves into terrible situation here.
Yeah, and we'll touch upon it in a second. Just with one more member's chat from Ben before we head off at our first break. Ben Jones says, I think we need to get Dom up the field more as he's so dangerous. I think we'll get Lavia before the Chelsea game and that'll help our attackers, but I've been very happy with Dom and Macha so far. He is right. The two we've made look good. They look really good signings. I disagree, Ben. I don't think Lavia will play against Chelsea. Even if they bought him today, I just don't think that would happen now. But you are. I do see his point as well, though. Like, the two we bought look good, it's fair to say. Right, then, we are going to speak about the transfers more in depth after this quick break. Yeah, we've got a new competition. We've obviously just rolled into August. We gave away our Legends signed shirt last month. This month's prize for our Legends over on Redmen Plus. One of you guys are going to win this, a signed shirt by Kostas Tsimikas. I'll see you in a second.
Hey, you, do you like incredible Liverpool memorabilia? Well, I've got a boss prize for you. It is this. It is a signed Kostas Tsimikas shirt, the man that won us the FA Cup. If you want to be in with a chance of winning this fabulous shirt, then go to redmenplus.com, sign up or upgrade to legend tier status, and your name will go in the prize draw for this. Yes, get a bit of Kostas in your life. Become a legend subscriber on redmenplus.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yes, simply get in that. Sorry, to simply get in that royal rabbit, all you got to do is be a legend subscriber over on redmenpost.com. You get loads and loads and loads of content, of course. If you sign up as a legend, you get loads of added perks, one of which is the entry into that prize draw. You'll also get access to our Discord chat. just your ass.
Or was it?
Yeah, for those.
Shit, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. You got apologies, Dan. We tried to make it look like Dan was already in the room. I stalled for time. Dan just put his ass in front of the camera. Sorry. For those listening. It's been a shambles.
What
so far.
A treat.
Anyway, yeah. There you go. Happy YouTubing. There you go. You got Dan's ass for nothing. Head to Dan's OnlyFans will be available soon.
Yeah, it's not free on there though.
Is it OnlyDans.com?
OnlyDans.com.
Anyway. Back to what I was saying. Be a legend on Red Men Plus. You'll be in that prize draw. We were giving that sign cost, that Simicast shirt away at the end of August. Right then, let's do the transfers. A very good friend of the show, Dan's BFF forever, Sasha Tavolieri. He has been all over this news about Romeo Lavia. I'm pretty sure he's got some pretty good sources by all accounts. He has tweeted about it momentarily before. He said, Romeo Lavia is not included today in the cup game with Southampton and he was not at their training camp this morning. The player side are looking to close the deal today between Liverpool and Southampton. This comes down on the back, of course, of a third bid rejected yesterday. It was Mel Reddy who, of course, first broke that story. Yep. Everybody else seemed to pick up on it and confirmed it was true. Chris is right. They've got to a stage now where they're already paying what they didn't want to pay. My sense, looking at it, the only way I can understand this now, and tell me if I'm an idiot, you can tell me I'm wrong, and please do so in the comments, YouTube. I'm fine with it. They got to a stage where they thought he's not going to play against Chelsea anyway. We're not that arsed if he's not here for Bournemouth. Can we save some money on this? Can we get up? Because even if you say, like, people go, just pay the extra 3, 4, 5 million quid. That's still 3, 4, 5 million quid. It's still money that he probably already they're paying more than they're comfortable with. I think it's well known what Liverpool thought he was worth, and they've just basically been backed into the situation now where they're going to end up overpaying a bit. That's the only way I can get my head around this, is that they've thought, well, there's no rush now. The rush would have been 3 weeks ago. Once you got to a certain point, it's a bit like when you're late. Once you're late for work, you're late. You might as well not try and get the speeding ticket now because you're already late. You know what I mean? You're really putting your foot down on the motorway. The second it ticks over past 9 o'clock, I'm late anyway. So I might as well just.
Yeah, but you don't stop for Costa then on the way in after that, do you? I don't know about that. I think we'd look really stupid amongst all this.
No, listen, Liverpool come out of this looking badly.
Yeah.
My belief is, and I know this for a fact, it isn't Liverpool leaking the information about these bids out. Southampton are being very, very clever. They are doing this. They're saying to Lavia and his camp, they know what the money is. Liverpool didn't just pay the first fee for any player. They've just never, Liverpool have never gone to, unless it's a release clause, Liverpool have never gone to a team after you and gone, how much do you want for him? Okay, sound. No one ever, in the history of transfers, no one does that. But it is the fact that it's got out and it's taken ages and the fact that we've got no defensive midfielders. That's what's making everyone think, oh my God, these look amateur this year.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And we don't often get embroiled in these sort of things, do we? Like you say, for whatever reason, maybe it just doesn't get out. The fact that we do have bids rejected or whatever, but in recent history especially, we haven't tended to this. Our transfers haven't played out in this manner, let's put it that way. And like I say, Southampton, fair play to them for A, sticking to the guns on their valuation of the player. And of course, like I say, fair play to them for sort of leaking it out in the way that they have, because it has made us look really, really bad. And I guess they're not adverse to that, given what happened with Van Dijk a few years ago especially. So yeah, can't really blame them for that. For us, from our point of view, I alluded to it earlier, I think it's been really poorly handled. I think we've known, I first spoke to Sasha Tavolieri, who sent me a voice note, by the way, in that break. I didn't get a chance to listen to it because I was rushing back. I spoke to him about 2 months ago about Liverpool and Lavia. Like, this isn't new.
John, listen to it, by the way.
No, I wasn't. Yeah, because it could be something. Like, it could be interesting.
It could be only Dan's.
Right? Most likely, he gets it for free. but yeah, we've known for so long that we want Lavia. He's been on our radar. And he was on our radar, like, when we knew we just needed the extra midfielder before Fabinho and Henderson left. So why is it taking so long? Were we waiting, perhaps, for a different opportunity, maybe Tchouaméni to come along, or a Caicedo to present itself, or whatever it may be? Is that what we're waiting for?
How much would we have bid for Caicedo? Though.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Maybe we're trying to say, but if now all of a sudden now we're saying we need two, which I agree with, by the way, you've got your 50 million and then maybe your 30, 40 million lad on top of that. Maybe that's your 90 million for just Caicedo or just Tchouaméni or whatever. That's the only way I can sort of rationalise it in my head, because to me, if I've known for a month and 2 months that Southampton want 50 million for Romeo Lavia and that Liverpool want the player, then Liverpool, York Schmadker, have definitely known that as well. So why are we now 6 days out from playing Chelsea and we've just had a half an hour conversation about sort of shoehorning a lad who isn't naturally a six into playing a six? Why are we in this situation?
It's one of your big summer signings as well,
and
by
we've
the
known,
way.
We've known for so long we were desperate for a six. That was such a weakness last year. Fabinho was miles off at times. He got better, and I agree with your point earlier, Chris, about when a lad comes alongside you, it takes some of the burden off. I think that's why we've seen a better version of Fabinho. But he was so poor last year that it was an area we needed anyway to strengthen. And then he leaves. This has been, it's been mismanagement, it's been negligent, it's been abysmal from Liverpool. This, and I'm not a big critique of what we do. I think we do really well in transfer business, generally speaking. But this has been horrendously handled.
Anyone who's played poker, right, and if you've tried to bluff somebody, right, and then they're going over the top on you, there's a point where you just have to give up your bluff.
Exactly. We were there
Liverpool have had no defensive midfielders and are trying to go around going, and this is early on before the Fabinho and the Henderson stuff, we'll have a little look at Gravenberch, we'll have a little look at Kefren Thuram, we'll have a little look at Kone or whatever it is, and then they come back and it's like, well, we'll give you 35. Well, because we're interested in these other players. They all die. So they go, right, you're only interested in us and Lavia. Then you lose your DMs in Henderson and Fabinho.
And Milner.
And you're supposed to be you're not in a strong position to negotiate. You're in the worst possible position to negotiate at that point. Because you have absolutely nobody who can play the position and you're trying to get their man for cheap. It ain't going to work. It was never going to work the way that they played out. There is a point where you have to give up on the bluff, and Liverpool should have given up on the bluff 2 to 3 weeks ago.
And it looks like they're probably about to give up on it. They're going to end up paying. Where they get Jamie Carragher tweeted. Oh, sorry, I've just.
By the way, even if they don't get 50, Southampton wouldn't have been asked. Because Southampton might have been saying 50, 50, 50, and all along they'd accept 45.
We'll find out what that deal comes to. Jamie Carragher tweeted yesterday. We had a members chat there asking him what we think of the Carragher comment. This was from Stuart Armstrong, one of our members. So for those who don't know, Carragher, after Paul Joyce tweeted out about the bids getting rejected, Carragher, this is embarrassing. Liverpool for years have got deals done quickly with no fuss. If you don't think he's worth 50 million quid, then move on. And if you really want him, they pay you. Also, I'm not sure why Liverpool are in for Caicedo. Yes, it's a lot of money, but Liverpool got big money for Henderson and Fabinho. So let's start with the first bit. This is kind of, and again, it is Liverpool for years now have got deals done quickly with no fuss. I don't know if I agree with that, because we were in for Alexis McAllister for months, and he had the freaking release clause. You know what I mean? Like, I disagree with that part of it, but the second part is right. He's either worth what the other team wants. You think they're lying to you, or you don't think he's that good enough, and in which case you need to be going elsewhere. If Liverpool don't think this lad's a £50 million midfielder, sound, I'm not sure he is myself, but if they don't think he is, then he's not going to solve your problems at DM anyway, because he can't be that good. You know, I think that's what Jamie Carragher's getting. And he's either, if he's the only one we're going to get, or it looks like he's the first choice. Liverpool obviously want him to be their number six going forward this season. He's going to be first choice in that position. Maybe Stephen Pichetta, I don't know. But in that situation, he probably is. He has to be worth the money. And if he's not, what the fuck are you buying him for? Because go and find somewhere else. I think that's what Jamie Carragher's point is, and I understand it.
Yeah, it's very much like what we've all said. If, you know, it's the player that we clearly liked, we wanted. We wanted him as an understudy to Fabinho. And at that point, we wanted him for 35 mil. That's what we believed he was. Liverpool didn't help themselves by selling Fabinho. And people can sit here and say 40 mil for Fabinho's boss, considering what we paid for him. But at the end of the day, I'm now sat here 5-6 days away from the Premier League starting without an actual DM. It clearly wasn't worth 40 mil if I don't have anything. And that 40 mil isn't getting me Lavia, because he's now 50 mil actually. So it is a case where Liverpool, if they believed he was worth that much, at some point down the line, where you say 2-3 weeks ago, they should have said, look lads, we've got to get him into the team, get him into pre-season, get him situated with what we want him to do in our plan, and get him used to the style. So then when it comes the season, he's perfect, he's fitted into the team, and we can go straight into it. And at that point, that's when Liverpool should have just said, yeah, they are. Here's 50 mil. Here's what you wanted. Now we've got to a point where bringing him in now probably wouldn't change anything, because we're clearly trying to suit McAllister or Curtis Jones to be the replacement right now for that position, sorry. And it's very much a case of, we're going to pay the money anyway, so you might as well have done it 3 weeks ago when he actually could have had a pre-season under Jurgen Klopp and understood the system better.
Listen, Romeo Lavia could come in and play really well in the first game he plays, and that could be that.
He could.
Mm.
But we haven't given him the best foundation for that, and that's on us.
Yeah.
You know, if he does it, it's not because of the way Liverpool have handled it. It's because he was so damn good. And I do get why Liverpool, he's 19 years old, I do get why Liverpool don't want to spend 50 million on a guy who's not finished growing,
yeah,
by the way, because that's when a lot of young players have problems, when they go through that 19 to 21 year thing. And so I get why they don't want to spend £50 million on a player. But if, you know, again, this is poor planning. This only got us into this situation. You know, you could have spent 50 million on a 24-year-old, but you've chosen the 19-year-old. You've decided that he's going to be the future. Now, he might not be ready right here today. You are paying for his future. Potential, you're paying for his potential and everything else, aren't you? And that's what Liverpool have clearly fallen in love with. But again, you've got a plan for the here and now, and you've got a plan for the future at the same time. And I feel like over the last 3 years, Liverpool's planning hasn't been excellent. You know, we've carried too many players for too long who should have been moved on. We've had too much loyalty to those players. We've not replaced quickly enough. We've not invested enough in the squad in terms of new players. We've invested a lot in wages, and that should be commended and stuff, but we should have had a bigger squad. We should have not gone into last season with a shit midfield. We should have not gone into a couple of years ago with a shit defence. You know, these are mistakes that aren't just this summer. This has happened 3 out of the last 5 summers. And that's a problem that Liverpool fans need to recognise and need to look at and go, well, are we fixing this moving forward?
What's interesting, though, if you don't mind, Chris, is that, and the owners get a lot of stick, and I'm looking at the comment section now, and it's full of it, as often is the thing. And for the most part, sometimes it's just noise, sometimes you agree with what's being said. This doesn't feel, and I might be wrong on this, Lav, you want, this doesn't feel like an ownership thing. This feels like a football personnel recruiting thing. Because, I mean, listen, if they're about to pay 50 million quid for them, the money's there. So the budget's there. It just feels like, whether it's Klopp, Schmanke, whatever it is, that part of the business has got this one wrong. Because if they're going to pay it anyway, which it looks like they're going to do, it must have always been there. I doubt they've gone knocking at the budget and asked for more. I think Jürgen's always said, the budget's set, and I got told what the budget is, and then I can spend it. This one feels like someone somewhere has decided, we're just going to try and get him for cheaper. I've got a theory that Liverpool always want to try and win the negotiation. All the time. They want to look like they've won every deal. Whether it's selling a player or buying a player, they always want to feel like that we got the better of that one. We got him for cheaper than he was worth. Look how smart we were, or we've just rinsed you for this one. And you're right, because they had no leverage in this situation. They had no way they could win this negotiation. The only way of getting this player out was Southampton meeting the asking price. And this is what I don't...
Liverpool don't always do that, because Szoboszlai is a perfect example.
Well, that's a release clause.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what you want to pay for him, you pay it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've decided straight off the bat.
But you can't win that. You can't win that negotiation.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But they don't need to do that every single time. You said they need to win every negotiation. They don't always. They can just pay the release clause.
Yeah, sorry, I apologise.
In this situation, you could have just paid the 50 million they asked.
No, I agree. They should have.
It's the same as the release clause, essentially. If they're digging the heels and saying we won't do it, it's the same thing.
No, listen, I'm agreeing with you. Yeah. I think that's my point. In this situation,
you're right, though.
It feels like they just like what they always want to feel like they've come out.
Everyone does in every situation. Of course you do. That's a natural human thing.
But sometimes you've got to be humble enough to go, you know what, we're in a bit of a fucking pickle here, we need to just get out of it.
What is the release clause of City, and do they have a sell on
next year? Yeah, they can get in for 40 mil,
and they have 20%.
They're getting 20% of whatever Southampton get now. So in theory, it's better actually. As long as the add-ons are realistic, it's better for Southampton to get a smaller fee this up front and then get the add-on money, because City get 20% of the initial fee.
Yeah.
But those add-ons have to be realistic.
And that's only the profit as well. Sorry,
and that's profit, yeah. The profit, yeah.
But there's the point then, in terms of, like, if you know he's already going to go for 40 anyway next season, and City will probably, you know, cash that in to then just go and sell him to someone else and get a bigger fee, because that's what the deal do. They did it with Calvin Phillips, and look, in 2 years time he'll still go for maybe 5 million under what they bought him for. So if you already knew that City, the best in the league, have the chance to get him next year and probably will do it, you know that you're going to have to go higher than what that release clause is. You know they're going to want 40 million minimum, especially if they've got an initial release clause on, because if you turn up to them and give them 40 mil, they're going to sit there and be like, no, because 20% of it is actually going to Manchester City right now. So we'll just wait till next season and get a full 40 mil for them. So why Liverpool haven't took that into consideration as well is a bit beyond me.
They probably, again, it looks like, I might be wrong, this might be foolish, it looks like they're going to get it done, and it looks like they're going to get him in. The question remains, Chris, if we presume Lavi is the one and he's going to be the one who they like, fair enough, that's on them. I actually back Liverpool's judgment of players a lot. I think they're really good at signing players. When they spend money on players, they tend to get it right. I think that's obvious. We always say they should spend more, but when they spend money, more often than not, they get it spot on. Naby Keita's probably the worst big money signing they've made.
There's question marks over Nunes.
And Darwin's the only other one at the moment. Everyone else, really, you would think, when they spend big dough, they get it right. So I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that this lad's the man. I've got my own doubts. I'm not convinced yet. I hope he is. I hope he's brilliant. I hope he's as good as they think. But they are going to need others. It leads me on to this Andre stuff.
Love him. Like him a lot.
Brilliant.
Would rather him over Lavia.
He might get both. At time recording, they're playing tonight, Fluminense, in the Copa Libertadores. So bear that in mind. If they go out,
they get knocked out, we can buy them.
There's a very good chance. Probably not 20 mil. Probably more like 40 mil euro, 30 mil-ish. But... Is that maybe enough?
I don't think that's sort of the squad out. I think that sorts your midfield out.
Yeah, there's still a defender to then get done, but it feels like there might be a chance to get to them very, very quickly. Now, if Fluminense go through tonight, does that mean we're not just signing another one? That's my worry on this one. That doesn't feel like a very well thought out plan. You're hoping that another team gets knocked out of a competition to have their lad, and if he doesn't, shrug your shoulders. I hope, again, Szoboszlai came from nowhere. So you bear in mind, there might be other deals getting done behind the scenes where another name pops out of nowhere. But again, I haven't seen enough of Andre to make a judgment on him one way or the other. I've seen the YouTube highlights where he looks like a little nasty fella, and he's got a bad muzzy. They're the only two things I can tell you about him.
That bad muzzy suits being a DM, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Better than any other position on the field, that suits.
Yeah.
You can imagine him two foot on someone.
You're not a right winger with that, are you?
No, you can't.
Two foot on someone and then just twiddling it a little bit. As he's laying on the floor. but other than that, so that could be, it feels like that might be the plan, I guess. I don't know. How are you reading this whole situation with him?
It wasn't the plan.
Okay. Or do you think Liverpool just using his name to get the lad?
I don't know. It certainly wasn't the plan. Because the plan was to keep Fabinho and play this season.
Yeah.
That was the plan. And the plan this season was to go in and do the 3-box-3 formation with Trent. And that might not be the plan right now, because with what Jürgen Klopp's saying. Liverpool are rolling with the punches right now and they're under serious pressure, and it's not just FSG that will be getting under pressure. It's the football people inside the club for me. You know, they've made some questionable decisions. You know, we know that Liverpool aren't as... don't have as much money as the other teams, and some people will show that in different ways. I think, and I've said this for close on a year now, I don't know whether FSG can keep us at the top challenging year in, year out on this playing field that we're in. In fact, I think very much that they can't, to be honest with you. I think they've done a good job at times of making sure that we're up there, but we've had a team that can challenge for the league title for 4 years, and we've challenged in two of them. And I think that's... there's been mistakes made for the other two, which is why we maybe haven't... you could go back maybe another year. Maybe we've challenged 3 years. You know, there have certainly been mistakes made. We've had two absolutely horrendous seasons when we shouldn't have had horrendous seasons. We're out of the Champions League. This is a situation that was brought on us by our football team last season and by the lack of investment last summer. We should have sorted that out very, very early doors. And it looked like, for all the world, we were going to sort that out early doors this summer, and we didn't sort that out early doors this summer. The same things each summer seem to be cropping up, and the same mistakes seem to be getting made. There's major issues with the Michael Edwards, the Julian Ward, the Schmacker stuff. The changing of people behind the scenes is a massive concern to me each and every day, because if you've got no stability behind the scenes, your football team has no stability.
Yep.
You know, there's no way for you to move forwards and stuff. So I think these are very, very trying times, and I think Jürgen is making the best of a bad situation. Jürgen will keep us competitive because of his will and because of his ability as a football coach. And, you know, we do have very, very good players, but it's going to be a struggle this season. We're not going to challenge for the title, and that's a really bad position. With the players that we've got, the reason we're not going to challenge for the title is the massive holes that we've got right now. And I be honest, I don't see that Lavia or Andre are going to change that fact this season. They might change it in 2 years, in 3 years' time, yeah. In the love, yeah. But right now, we've got the nucleus of a team that can challenge for a league title.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And we're wasting another year if we don't sign a couple of players that take us to be able to challenge.
And like I say, the it feels like they are going to sign, to wrap it up, close. Looks like I think they're going to sign at least two. I think they might actually sign for Ayrton. I think there's a defender, something happening there as well. It's just now where is it a case of? Because I disagree. I actually think Liverpool can challenge the title. I think they're going to be closer. I don't know they'll win it. I think it's impossible to ever predict that Man City won't win the title. I think you've just that's got to be your default position. I think Liverpool can. I think the firepower is what gets me there. But they can't right now. But I think with two, maybe three. I think they would could do it. It's just now. We've got to get past that Newcastle game.
If you'd give me Guardiola and Declan Rice, we'd challenge for the title. We'd probably
all
win
day
it.
Long, yeah.
But we're not going for those type of players.
No.
They're tried and tested. Proven.
No, I agree with you. I'm with you. I get you. I completely agree. You are right. I still think there's enough good players and great players in the squad where they can. But it goes back to my thing before. The margins are thin. Man City's margins are wider because if Guardiola's shit, who gives a fuck? Mm-hmm. He could be fucking crap. I think he's not going to be, by the way. I think he's brilliant. But if he's rubbish, they don't have to play him. That's just the difference in the ownership. The flip side of that is, of course, they don't play by the rules. You know what I mean? Arsenal, as good, like for example, if Rice is crap, Arsenal are fucked. Because that's the difference between both sides. They spent a lot of money on him. It was the same with us, with Van Dijk and Alisson. If one of those two were rubbish, we were knackered. City haven't got that worry. That's the difference in it. Again, I suspect Declan Rice is going to be really good. But if he just shits the bed, it gets too big for him, he just isn't of the level. Arsenal are in trouble. They're the fine margins. And that's my worry, Cloak, to come back to you, with the Lavia fingers, that he's another one.
But isn't that sort of what Dan was sort of saying before about the Casado thing? Is that you've got one that's almost a surefire successful thing. And that's what Arsenal have done. They've not gone for a 40 million player and a 50 million player. They've gone, I'm going for what I believe is the surefire fucking... Yeah. Answer to my problems.
Yeah. And we're gambling on two, basically.
You say this, my thinking is, right, I don't think they spend £50 million on a gamble. I think they think he's brilliant. They might be,
I think you have to.
That's what I'm saying. They might be wrong. It feels to me, they think he... Cause as much as it's 51 quid, it's a fucking lot of money. It's one of Liverpool's most expensive ever transfers. That's what they're going to pay. It's going to be the most expensive transfers ever been made from a Championship club. You know, Maddison holds that record currently from like 2 weeks ago. They're about to break that. This is my point. I think they think he's brilliant, and I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, but I've got my doubts. You know, that's my point of view. That's why I think if Liverpool get him and he's as good as they think he is, I think they can challenge. I think they're always going to be playing on the margins. It's going to be dead hard to beat City. Arsenal were fucking brilliant, as good as they've been for years, and they finished miles away from Man City. Man City have set the bar so high, but I think they have got the benefit of it. It doesn't matter. I think, again, I go back to it. If Rice is crap, Arsenal will be nowhere near it. If Lavi is crap, we'll be nowhere near it. And that's the margins that we're all playing in here. Man United are the same. They made a couple of big money signings. If any of them are rubbish, they've been nowhere near it. They need this lad up front who, they need him to be boss. And we're going to speak about that later on the buyer show. But to go back to it, Chloe, very quickly, before we start wrapping up, if it is Andre and Lavi and one more defender, how would you see Liverpool?
Sorry, does anyone think we're going to sign three?
No.
I do. Yeah, I do.
I hope we do.
I hope we do, but I don't think we're going to sign three.
I think they're going to sign Lavia, yeah, another mid, and I think
the defender just comes out of nowhere for me. Where's that going to come from?
Who's available?
I think they'll find. I think it'll be a young defender, but I think they'll sign one. But anyway, let's say they do. Are you happy with the window at that point? Although it's been, you know, better late than never. Where do you think Liverpool are?
Top four, that is probably the hype that I'm going to give them, to be honest. I don't, once again, Lavia might be an unbelievable player. I don't think he's worth 50 mil. Right now I do, though, because I'm running out of time. But I don't think he's the player. I don't think he has the height of Fabinho right now. He might do in a couple of years' time. But like you mentioned, he's not going to come in and slot in, and I don't think he might make us better right now. But I don't think he's going to make us the team that Liverpool were when they're at the best. He might be able to do that 2-3 years, but he's not for now. He's a 19-year-old lad. God forbid he gets some stress injuries.
Do you think that surely they don't think that? Because they don't know.
But sure, they wanted him as an understudy.
He should have been
anyway.
An understudy. He still should be an understudy, in my opinion.
They wanted him, as the understudy. Yeah. So he can't now just become your number one.
And
so
I like him, by the way. I'm a big fan of his. He's going to be a good player.
I agree. To an extent, and I'll come to you on this one, Daniel, maybe I'm the only one who's thinking this, is that if they don't think he's that good, why are they paying 50 million quid for him?
Because they really want him. Future. I think there's a little bit of that future-proofing going on, personally. I think we know that every big club, including Manchester City, although I'm not convinced they go back from next year, depends where they're at with their DM stuff.
I didn't think they would. Rodri's like 26,
exactly,
isn't he?
Exactly that, yeah.
I just feel like they'd do it to sell him.
Maybe, and by
later.
That point, who knows who they'll have unearthed from somewhere else. So that remains to be seen. But regardless of which, I think Arsenal, Chelsea, Man United, every single big club, Real Madrid, Barcelona, would have wanted and stroke do want Romeo Lavia. So I think there's a little bit of future-proofing going on with the signings. We know he's going to be world class in 2-3 years' time, so let's get in now while we can, which is good. That's smart, of course it is. But for the here and now, it doesn't take you to where we want to be. And where we want to be is challenging for the title, is a guaranteed certified top four. That should be the bare minimum. We want to be above that. And you're right, though, by the way, you're right to make the point because I agree. But Romeo Lavia, for me, as he is the footballer right now, doesn't take us back to title challenges. He should be the understudy to the lad who does take us back to title
also,
challenges.
You know, you've just mentioned a young centre-half there. Well, I'm worried about Robbo at this moment in time. So if we're only getting a young lad who potentially can't come in, everyone wanted Levi Colwill, that boat has gone. He was the one who was young enough, but I thought, yeah, he slots right in him. I'm sat here, Mickey van der Ven's gone off to Spurs. That's the lad that we wanted. I don't know who's available to begin with. I don't know who we're looking at. I don't know who can come in slot in case Robbo cannot understand the system. He was getting far too high the other day. You can't have both of them going at the same time. And the other thing is, this other midfielder, if we're spending over the budget of what we wanted to spend now on Lavia, then who the hell am I getting for 30 million who's good enough to come and help us out there?
I mean, Andre, we're all Argentina's juniors fans.
We are, but... Who knows if they'll go? It's really bad.
You're right, though, to the point you made earlier. If they win tonight, Fluminense, they're at home, it's 1-1 from the first leg. If they win tonight, what are Jorg Schmadke and Klopp look at each other and go, oh, well, that's that then. Yeah. Like, what do you do next? And they're just the smacks at Jorg Schmadke's of the really poor planet. And it just shows you again, like we touched upon it earlier, like our best laid plans and sort of our proactiveness in the window looked really impressive because we went and got McAllister dead quick, yeah. Dead cheap, boss, happy days. We then sort of capitalised on the Szoboszlai opportunity, brilliant, all made up. Then as soon as something negative happened, i.e. Henderson and Fabinho leaving, we can't react to it. And this is where we're at now, 3 weeks later, we've got no one else through the door, and who knows what happens next.
I'm pretty sure the show before I went on holiday, I think we all sat here and literally all of us turned around and said, we'll sign two within the next 2 weeks. I'm sat here 3 weeks later and we've signed no one.
You're right. We'll start wrapping up there. We've got a few super chats to get to before we do. Then I'll let you guys know what's coming up later on. The guys over at the Born and Red Show, hello guys, hope you're enjoying watching us. Say, Klopp is a genius, but all genius need United efforts. It's a big 2 weeks ahead. It's longer than 2 weeks, isn't it? How long?
1st September, it's like 3 weeks.
We've got three weeks. You are right, yeah.
It's a big 2 weeks previously. If you just signed these yesterday.
Just in terms of the actual footy matches, that may be part of that one. Nigel's complimentary of you. Says Chloe for Jürgen's assistant. We'd see a difference straight away. There you go. You could be the new Pep Linders.
Go off me now, Nigel.
You're back, are you? You're back, yeah. Chloe's back already. Josh Owen, thanks for your super chat. Says your mate Sasha just tweeted. Yeah, we read that before. Jack saying, yeah, he said Lavia's looking to seal the deal today. Well, fingers crossed. Hopefully it all works out. And then the last one, very quickly, because I'll get your thoughts on this one. I think that's Alger Brew. Apologies, I've got your name wrong. What's your opinion on Bacet? Just the DM. He was good last season, but he's only 19. Would we not be better off spending £50 million on a class centre back and playing him instead? That's my
opinion. I love Pacetic. I think there might be some behind the scenes concerns about his injury, and what the next couple of years looks like for him. I wouldn't feel comfortable with just him going in, obviously, as a DM this season. The centre back thing I find quite interesting, because are we looking for a centre back, or are we looking for a left back that can play centre back, or a centre back that can play left back? And I think looking at a centre back who can play left back. That's a really small pool of players. Yeah. And that's why I don't think Liverpool are going to sign them.
I just think they're looking for someone who's better than Matip. I think they're going to play with, I think Robertson's going to play all year, which is a gamble again. I think they're backing him. I think they're going to look at someone who's better than Matip.
I don't think that improves
your squad.
I'm always about improving my team, mate. I'd go centre back who can play a left back if I had the choice. You might be right, that might be the way that they go, but like, fucking Konate injury issues, Matip injury issues, Gomez injury issues, form issues. You're right, we need somebody for that sort of that role and stuff. But like,
they're not beating Konate on his day.
Yeah,
but so three lads you can play.
You're not. You need to sort out the people who are on the pitch that play for you. Get rid of them. Get lads in who can play every week. Not add another player to an injury-prone bunch. That's bad planning. It's what got us into the defence being shit a couple of years ago with the midfield being fucking shit
I think you're right. The last part is why they're doing it. I think they're getting massive replacements in a year early. So I think it's going to be a youngish player who was a little bit like what Konate was. Konate come in and he wasn't playing straight away. He was Matip's replacement. It just happens that Matip's still here. You know what I mean? But Konate is the... I think they're going to try and get someone in now to be that, because that's... But again, I might be wrong on that. Very, very quickly, we've gone a bit long here.
Wasn't Konate Matip's replacement?
That's what I'm saying. Okay. In the first team, but now I think they need Matip's replacement as the third, fourth choice. I don't think they're going to sign, because
I'd buy a centre half who can play left back. I would as well,
but I don't think that's what they're going to do. I think Robbo's the left back to go. Jamie, to round up with one more super chat, says I think we'll sign Lavia and a young centre back, and then we'll get the second midfielder in January, maybe Andre. I mean, that is flying by the seat of your pants. Maybe you are. That way, you're going back to what you said before. You rely on Lavia and Bichetta, just your two DMs, two teenagers.
Jesus Christ.
And Thiago to drop in every now and then.
And maybe McAllister as well. Who knows? There's a lot going on with the old transfers.
I've not felt better after this, by the way. I've felt actually...
I'm excited for the season. Like, this is all... I understand that. I get it all. But there's nothing ever that could stop me being excited for Liverpool's first game of the season. I don't care who's on the pitch or anything. It'll be Sunday afternoon and I'll be fucking buzzing. There's nerves. And I am not as confident as I sometimes am going into Liverpool seasons, but I'm super excited about
it. Can we do a predictions? Maybe this is for biased, actually, in terms of predictions for game week one, or can that be unbiased?
I mean, no.
What's your biggest concern? Sorry, I knew it would happen. Mine's probably the left back situation at the minute, you know.
Mine is that we don't have a defensive midfielder.
Yeah.
No, but I think that's going to get. I'm certain that.
Mine is that the defensive midfielder.
That's going to get fixed. Whereas the left back thing isn't.
I don't think it is, though. But
I hope
he's brilliant. I hope he's brilliant. There are concerns. And the last one, I'll be honest, my biggest concern is this fucking system. It terrifies me.
Yeah.
Honestly, I am terrified of lads who kick the ball there far behind us. It really scares me. Like, I shouldn't be that.
My biggest concern is reading into Klopp's what he said last night about, you know, having to change the formation and stuff. I don't think that's a good headspace for your manager to be in at the end of a summer and the start of a season, to be honest with you, where he thinks, and he said all season long, we need to get lads through the door. Want a settled squad going into it. I want this, I want that. And then to have him upset and questioning whether the formation's right for the players that you've got on the eve of a Premier League season is not good. And I just wonder whether Jürgen's a little bit disappointed now this summer's played out. And I wonder whether that's going to have a knock-on effect to anybody else.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. His comments, it looks like he's a bit pissed. I think that was almost his way of saying, get this fucking done.
Yeah,
and I
don't think
it's a surprise then that this Lavia stuff might be taking another turn today. Maybe he's just gone in there and gone, for fuck's sake, lads, just get me this player. I'll get through Chelsea, get me in for Bournemouth, please. And then, because you've got to remember, Liverpool only played like 4 games in like 40 days. You know, competitive games. There's not much footy. They play once a week for 3 weeks, and then there's this fucking international break again, which is a bad thing that's happening early September. So I do think there is time to get it right, you know what I mean?
That's why teams go in undercooked, isn't it?
My Man City lose every single Charity Shield because they are undercooked, and then you hope that you get through the season. The fixture list might not have been kind. Craig says, Chris, can you give us a smile? You look very down with a super chat. Mm-hmm. Craig was feeling...
it's just annoying, isn't it? You should have sorted this shit out.
Can we end on a positive?
Footy starting.
What are you most looking forward to for the Reds?
Something mad against Manchester United, like another 6-0 or a 7-0.
I think we're going to be Chelsea
4-2. Oh, that would be good. I have it in my thing for bias later. I think Liverpool are going to be the top scorers, and that's always fun to watch.
Loads of goals are plenty. Yeah, speaking of bias, we'll be over on Red Men Plus very, very shortly with the Bias Transfer podcast. We'll have a little look at what's going on around the league in terms of incomings and outgoings, and then we'll all be making our season predictions where we predict the champions, top six, who's going to win the Champions League. Mad random shout of the season already. We'll definitely come back to these at the end of the season and look who made an absolute fool of themselves. So if you want to head over to redmenplus.com, we will be streaming the Bias Transfer podcast very, very shortly. Thanks so much for everyone for joining us today. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Chloe. Thanks for Chris, you miserable bastard. We'll see you all next time on Red Men Original. See you in a bit.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.